Welcome to Type 40, a Doctor Who podcast here on the Fandom Podcast Network. On this show, we will take an in-depth and closer look at this beloved television series, the spin-offs, the merchandising, and the global fandom phenomenon that has shaped the landscape of science fiction for over five decades and counting. So step into our TARDIS, back into our TARDIS, and please enjoy our journey together here on Type 40. Hello. Back again, back out with the Vortex. Only been a couple of weeks, if the time chronometer's right on this thing. Kyle, he never puts things back as I like them to between you and me. But yeah, Kyle's off. I think he's probably sort of spinning around somewhere at the moment on the planet Tax. And yeah, so I'm here flying the TARDIS, not alone. I've got someone with me. I'm going to introduce them in a moment. I'm Dan. And we're getting stuck in now into 2019. It's a bit sparse Doctor Who wise, so we're sort of having to wing it as we go along, aren't we? It's it's so quiet out there you could hear a Vashti Narada fart. So we're having to make this up as we go along, find lots of little morsels to bring your way and all these things to talk about. But fortunately, there has been 55 years worth of Doctor Who before all this to sort of work our way through. And joining me today, we're going to delve into one specific person's contribution to Doctor Who, a long contribution, and joining me today to talk about that, yes, it's the Queen of the North, and it's Sheffield's original Time Lady, Sarah Graham. Hello, Sarah.
Hello, Dan. I thought you were trying to introduce me as Sansa Stark then.
Yeah, well, you know, We've got into the sort of habit of crossing the franchises on this show lately, haven't we? We're deep in, it's Game of Thrones season at the moment, so yeah, I thought you'd appreciate that.
Oh, thank you.
It's not quite Winterfell out there, is it? But I'm still waiting for summer to come. What's it like by you?
It's been a bit cold, actually. It's still winter, I think, for you.
And I mean, the thing is, maybe this is what you could call the off-season, isn't it? Doctor Who off-season. So, we have to find all different ways to amuse ourselves over these months with what we read and what we watch and the places that we go. And you've been somewhere very specific, haven't you? A little while ago now. But, you're going to report in, aren't you, for anybody who's interested. it's the Fandom Podcast Network, of course, and you can find us. It's all over the internet. There's the Fandom Podcast Network master feed, and that's on at fpnet.podbean.com and fpnet on the Podbean app. The Fandom Podcast Network is also on iTunes, Stitcher, Podbean again, and Google Play, all over the place. And of course, there's our Instagram feed, which is mostly manned by Sarah, finding all sorts of fantastic images and marking all the actors' birthdays and various bits of Doctor Who trivia. So you can find that on Instagram. Certainly most days are something nice to see. And over on Facebook, the Type 40 Doctor Who Fandom Podcast Group, which has recently been relaunched, you'll find over 700 other Doctor Who fans in there chatting away about Doctor Who past and present, and anything else, idle speculation. You know what Doctor Who fans are like. If that's your bag, and I certainly is if you're here listening to us too, then yeah, get over there and come and find us, come and have a chat. You can contact us, all of us, directly. Kyle, he may not be here today, but he's on Twitter as at AKyleW on Instagram and at KyleFandom. And you can find me on Instagram. I'm at DanHadley, double underscore, or on Facebook, again in that Type 40 group, or there's the Spacebook, which is a social media group where we talk about, well, everything else that isn't TARDIS related. So you come and find us there too. Sarah, where can people find you? Just remind us very quickly.
You can find me at Evenstar85 on Instagram, and I'm also on Twitter at Starry Eyed Girl.
Twitter as well, eh? You brave girl.
I'm still dabbling. I'm still not quite used to Twitter, but
I dabbled. I'll get there. I dabbled, and now I've dabbled off. But yeah, I'm going to have to try again. Carl's listening to this. I'm going to have to try again. I noticed on the Instagram feed a little while ago, a couple of weeks ago, there was a fantastic picture of you in your headgear and wearing a very fetching T-shirt with the resplendent with the Type 40 logo on. Did you get that by any chance at the T Public store?
I did. How did you guess?
It's funny you should say that, because if you're listening to this and you like the look of Sarah's shirt, then you can help support the Fandom Podcast Network and wear some of this fantastic, all our original designs, really, all our swag, as I believe. I'm not sure I can get away with swag. Other people call it swag. But yeah, they all these original designs on T-shirts, mugs, hats, and everything else is over there at T Public. And yeah, it's at T Public Go. And you can search for the Fandom Podcast Network and find the whole storefront. And there's lots of designs and colours to choose from. I'm sure you'll have minutes of fun there. And on iTunes, don't forget iTunes. Yeah, we're trying to... we've got a decent presence on iTunes. The feed does quite well there. Please search for Fandom Podcast Network on iTunes. Come and leave us a review if you can. 5 stars would be fantastic, of course. But, we know, any feedback. Constructive criticism is always greatly appreciated, isn't it, Sarah? We love that.
It is.
It is. Can't go wrong. And yet, where should we start? What's going on in the time vortex? That's the question. And the answer, it's not a lot, is it, Sarah?
No, it's been very quiet.
But until today. What happened today? Yeah.
What happened today? We finally found out what we kind of suspected a while back, but we finally got it confirmed. Season 10 is being released as an Xbox set. I'm really excited about this because I love the Green Death. It's one of my absolute favourites.
Yeah, it's come as no surprise to anybody. I mean, there was speculation about this some time ago, and some of the people who put the VAM together for these Blu-ray sets, you know, they put on social media, don't they? They take a shot where they're filming a documentary. So we knew they were filming something at Unit HQ, which does narrow it down to 1 of 2 years.
Yes.
So and there was an image, wasn't there, like a really low-res image of this artwork in circulation months ago, which was really quickly pulled. Mm-hmm. So it's come as no surprise to anybody, really, that it's season 10, but it's still nice. And, of course, it's nice to have another Doctor. If John Pertwee's Doctor is your favourite, then at last you can have something in HD on those beautiful discs with all those features. And, yeah, obviously we'll be talking about that a little later here on the Fandom Podcast Network's Type 40, because we do go through the Blu-ray ranges. We like to showcase them. More of that a little later on. But, yeah, I mean, this release, I mean, you look down at the features of it as well. We've got original feature-length documentaries on, firstly, on the whole of the John Pertwee era, with all new contributions from people like Katie Manning, the people you'd expect, really, Terence Dix and Katie Manning. But there's also Stephen Moffat's going to be on there, Sarah. Stephen Moffat, and your personal showbiz mate, Mark Gatiss, too.
Yeah. Oh, they just can't keep away, can they?
And there's the option of updated special effects on Planet of the Daleks, which is not a bad thing, you know. It's always nice to have that option, I feel. And there's more of the Behind the Sofa and a couple of other little documentaries, one with Toby Hadoki. And, the thing that interests me the most, did you see the clip that they put on the internet today, Sarah? That beautiful clip with Katie.
The bonus scene.
Yeah, yeah.
Yes. Oh, I thought it was wonderful.
A bonus scene, sort of. I mean, it was an advert for the box set, really, wasn't it? But they framed it, as I'm sure you've seen too. But
it was very much in keeping, though, to the Green Death.
I mean, the having Joe Grant Jones, and Cliff pulling up in Bessie. Stepping deep into the mud and pulling out they look like sort of cut price Ghostbusters packs, don't they? You know, walking into a bar and Joe says, "Hello, boys." And then all these giant maggots sort of look up, very sort of, it's all very Scooby-Doo, but tremendous fun. And this is the thing. I mean, every time I think to myself, you know, can I justify rebuying these things after I've bought them once on VHS, bought them again on DVD? And I'm very easily persuaded, Sarah. Just it takes one thing like that, and I'm there. I'll be placing the order at Amazon.com, doing the old pre-order business. It looks like it's out in July. Is that what you've read too?
I've heard July, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, because there was a bit of sort of to and fro about that. It does keep to the 3-month pattern. So yeah, season 10, another Blu-ray box set, that'd be the fourth. And yeah, stay tuned for more about that. And then there's this, I'll tell you what, Sarah, the technology, it confuses me no end. What's a VR experience? Have you got any idea?
Virtual reality?
It's got to be something like that, isn't it? Well, whatever it actually is, Jodie Whittaker's made one. She's playing the Doctor in one. It says it's a new original story set in the TARDIS. Oh, that means so they don't have to animate too much. We'll see Jodie Whittaker reprise her role as the Doctor in animated form. It'll run for around 12 minutes, and it's going to be available on selected VR headsets in the coming months. So if you have a VR headset, I'd be, you know, by all means, take a picture of yourself wearing that and watching this, because I don't really know what it is. But I'm eager to find out. It says that viewers can join the 13th Doctor on board, the TARDIS, in this whole interactive story from the BBC and Passion Animation Studios. Sounds even more exciting. So, yeah, that's coming up too. More animated Doctor Who. I don't know whether you follow the story, whether you can influence the story in any way, or you just experience it. It sounds like that, doesn't it? It sounds like a whole sort of panoramic thing.
Definitely sounds like one for the kids and big kids.
Yeah, well, I used to be up on this sort of thing, but yeah. But so yeah, that about covers it really for what's coming up. It's very, very quiet. I know that filming's continuing. They've been in Barry Island again. Oh, mm-hmm. I do like Barry Island, though, and they've been in the Canary Islands, I think.
Yeah, I heard that, yeah.
It's a bit like a travelogue, watching watching Bradley Walsh's Instagram feed, isn't it? Yeah. It's good to know somebody's having fun. Yeah, so that's continuing. We probably won't find out a single thing about what they're actually filming or where until, well, if last year's anything to go by, probably until about fortnight before Doctor Who Series 12 starts. Yeah, we're going to be a bit later on in the series. We're going to be talking a lot more about the news in general, about the current state of Doctor Who and Doctor Who fandom. But yeah, we're going to keep going back to it. But in the meantime, we're going to slip back into the past. And you've been not so much time travelling, but definitely space travelling a few weeks ago, didn't you, Sarah? Where did you go?
Well, I went to a Doctor Who event in Liverpool back in February. And it was an interview with a Q&A session with Graham Harper, which, of course, you'll know is quite legendary in Doctor Who and in British television anyway. I only know him from the Doctor Who stuff. Mm-hmm. I didn't know anything else about his career until I was there. But what I'd gone for originally was he was doing this Q&A session, and then he had brought with him some rushes of filming the new series. Particularly season. Series 2 with David Tennant, and then Series 4 as well.
Wow.
And there's quite a lot of unseen footage. So that is what sparked my attention.
I didn't know this. I knew there's a Q&A involved. So where exactly did you go? Was it like a miniature theatre or something?
It was a lovely building. It apparently is Liverpool's remaining video rental shop.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Tell me more.
I think there is like a small TV studio, like a local thing as well. But the area it was in, it was just floor to ceiling of VHS tapes and old movie posters and props. And, oh, God, it was like my heaven. And they'd also got video players. So
no, you're talking. I would pack my bags now and move in.
Yeah. So if you had, if you wanted to, you know, rent, they were still doing it. If you wanted to rent, and you didn't have a video player, you could rent the player.
Oh, now this is starting to ring a bell. You could rent it for how long? For a few weeks at a time.
I'm not sure. I'd need to look into it. But it's just fascinating just seeing this like pile of VCRs, you know.
Well, most important question of all, did they have any Doctor Who VHS tapes in there?
They did.
Because, you know, obviously, Doctor Who on VHS, I mean, they're very difficult to part with. I've still got all mine. So, you know, the idea that you could sort of potentially rent a VCR, go really old school, you know, and we were talking about the Blu-rays earlier, but, you know, if that's not your bag, it isn't for everybody, is it? Some people like the role of the tracking and the slightly sort of fuzzy picture. I mean, to be honest, I've still got a 4:3 telly. Just behind me in the room we're recording this in now. Yeah, so I'd watch things like that all the time, really. If it was,
I miss videos. I'm waiting for the resurgence.
Yeah, it'll happen.
It
one
won't
day.
Be vinyl.
So this independent venue that you've been to, that's their sort of selling point. Is it's like stepping a little bit back into the past. They've invited Graham Harper for this one. Was it just Graham Harper on the bill, or did he share it with others?
It was just Graham Harper. Yeah.
Because as you've said, I mean, Graham Harper, he's probably, he's not the most prolific Doctor Who director, but this is a guy who's been in television in one form or another since he's about 12 years old. I'm just going to run through a few facts here. He actually turned 74 years of age about 3 weeks ago, and originally started out as a child actor. And now I've remembered all this. I've been genned up about it. He started as a child actor for the BBC, little bit parts here and there, and that is how he came to work with the producer and director Sean Sutton, who Doctor Who fans will know. He used to turn up in a lot of documentaries and special features and things like that in the 80s and the 90s, and he carried on working as a child actor for a number of years. And you know, there comes a point, isn't there? You know, Fraser Hines was a child actor. Some of them go on and some of them don't. And in Graham Harper's case, you know, he left acting and went into the theatre and all sorts of other things. And eventually ended up working as a driving instructor, of all things, in the mid-60s, whilst trying to get back into the BBC and sort of work his way into production somehow, into the behind-the-scenes things. And it was whilst he was working as a driving instructor that one thing led to another, and one of his students happened to know somebody who knew somebody, that he found himself invited to the set of Stanley Kubrick's 2001, A Space Odyssey. And it was that that sort of opened his eyes to directing and sort of gathered his resolve to recontact the BBC, to reconnect with Sean Sutton. And that was how he sort of got his foot back in the door, really. And from 1967, right the way through till 1980, I believe. Yeah, that's right, because the first thing he worked on was The Power of the Daleks as a floor manager. Mm. And the way they do it, the BBC sort of went around working on various shows. And he worked on Doctor Who numerous times, right up until Warrior's Gate in 1980, when he decided...
Well, he brought that up, actually, because I mean, you might know more about it than I do, but apparently there was some problems filming that, and he kind of took over.
Yeah, the original director had a massive alleged falling out with John Nathan Turner, the producer at the time. But then again,
I can't imagine that.
Yeah. It's all. I think the director was a guy called Paul Joyce, who was one of these that sort of worked for the BBC once and then never did again. And Harper was the he'd have been the production manager on that, and apparently took over for numerous sequences. And looking back, I mean, some of them are very, very Harper. I mean, there's one in particular where Romana is strapped into a chair, and the camera sort of crashes right into her face. You know, I can't think of. Of course, now it seems obvious that was Graham Harper, but
yeah.
You know, from that onwards, he went into freelance directing, because that seemed to be, I think, at the time that the BBC were very much moving towards the freelance model. So, you know, when you got to sit down and listen to a Q&A with Graham Harper, I mean, did he talk about the whole length and breadth of his career?
Yeah. He started, like you were mentioning, he started talking about his childhood and what he was like at school. Yeah. He was a bit of a monkey by sounds of it. He kept skipping school and being a bit mischievous. And he mentioned, I think it was the Pickwick Papers. It was first in, and they wanted a child with red hair. And he had red hair when he was a young boy. I can't imagine it, actually. But he had really red hair. And that's how he got into the whole acting thing. He talked about it. He didn't mention the Stanley Kubrick thing. That's really interesting. I didn't know about that one.
There are numerous sort of links to Doctor Who. And that film, it's quite extraordinary.
You can see it now. It all makes sense now. Yeah. But yeah. He talked about, you know, working his way up through the BBC and, you know, wanting to, go into directing. And they did talk at length about Warrior's Gate and, how he did a lot of input to get it finished on time. But it was very... very diplomatic about it, you know. He could have just said, you know, oh, you know, I did this and I did that and I saved it. But it wasn't. It was really, yeah, it was really modest. Kind of humble about it.
Yeah, because back in 19, I mean, that particular season of Doctor Who, season 18, it was very thematically ambitious, and it was, of course, it was John Nathan Turner's first season, as we'll probably be talking about this. Some point on the next type water. But yeah, it was a sort of, I wouldn't say it was make or break for Doctor Who, but it was certainly about making a big, bold statement. And I think that the fact that the scripts were so ambitious and would push some of the directors who, you know, in the case of the BBC, you know, you got directors who the previous week had probably been working on All Creatures or Angels or one of the various other shows that you know, Graham Hart probably worked on himself, and they would find them a little taxing. And I mean, I'll say this for the production team at the time: John Nathan Turner was a big believer in bringing new people through and giving them a try, both writers and directors, and letting writers direct and directors write, which is also really unusual. Because, you know, it tends to be that people like to put creatives in boxes. I mean, we see that even now. And of course, sometimes these things worked out, and sometimes they didn't. But in this instance, it sounded like this was the final sort of push, even that Graham Harper needed to get him to quit his job, to get him to leave the staff job and go freelance and start touting for. Knowing that he got a director's eye, I suppose, and maybe that he'd saved that project. Is that how it sounded?
Yeah, that's definitely how it sounded. And then, of course, that his next job was, of course, directing The Caves of Androzani. He did talk at length at that. Do you know what? He's such a lovely gentleman. I mean, I can't remember how long ago it was. Was it 2009 where it was voted the best Doctor Who story of all time?
I believe so, yeah. Yeah, I think a couple of times.
And obviously that got brought up, and he still looks so humbled by this. Because as soon as it got mentioned, you know, we all clapped.
Yeah.
And he just looked so happy and proud. It was just a lovely moment.
How many people roughly were seated at the Q&A?
30 or 40.
So it was intimate, but still enough for a round of him to feel that applause.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It was a lovely atmosphere. Yeah. And he did. He just looked so happy and touched. Like even now, it's still, you know, that he touched so many people.
Because prior to this, he hadn't been freelance for very long. And no. I suppose, I mean, the way we all do, I work freelance. You do, you pull on the strings. You know, you have a network of people who you know like you and trust you and will work with you over and over again. He'd worked I think he'd worked at the BBC on things like The District Nurse and Angels, you know, they were two really popular, this is before your time, two really popular sort of medical shows, medical dramas. And then straight on to Doctor Who. And the Caves of Androzani in 1984, Peter Davison's last story, just to refresh your memory if you don't know. It's at the time, I mean, watching it at the time, I was 11 years old. I mean, it was very obvious this was something different. You know, I didn't know what a director really did when I was 11. You know, you know, I'd argue that a lot of 11-year-olds certainly didn't then. Yeah. Maybe they do now. I don't know. But yeah, I mean, watching that, it was immediately different and cinematic. And I don't know if this is actually true. But it's certainly the use of sort of Steadicam to go underneath tables and to work the whole set as well as the actors. There's a lot talked about
He did mention that it is one of his hallmarks now, and he said basically it was just because of the set was just this sort of one cave. He was trying to use that space as much as possible, so hence the angles and trying to make it look bigger and faster than it actually was. And the scene with Peter running at the end, you know, when he's getting shot
on location
with the blast
in episode
that
4.
Was just what that was one continuous shot because they didn't have time or the money to do it again. And they were really close. They said there was it was about 6 inches away from where Peter was running, and they had to mock precisely where it was. And he got blasted in the face a lot, Peter. He had a lot of sand in his eyes. He said that was the biggest injury I had, of just getting sand blasted.
Well, yeah, because they would have had to have mined with charges, wouldn't they? The special effects unit would have done that.
A lot of people know, you know, even then there was the budget issues, and originally the weapons were going to be lasers. It was going to be much more futuristic, and it was Graham's decision to make it more, you know, well, why don't we use machine guns and make it, you know, more gritty, and that's how you got that more kind of like terrorist.
Oh, I'm so pleased that he pushed for that, because I think that the electronic effects in there that work with the androids, they work so well because they are sort of one-offs, and the contrast works really, really well. That the fact that the androids, who also carry normal guns, not laser weapons, but they're sophisticated technology. And yeah, I can't think that would have worked anywhere near as well. Just go necessity, the mother of invention, with Doctor Who, time and time and time again. I mean, there are so many things about that story. I mean, one of my favourite scenes is the one where Sharris Jek loses his mask and scrambles across the floor of the bunker, sort of in horror that I think he's hiding, trying to hide his face from everybody, from Perry really, from himself. And he follows him underneath the table, doesn't he? It's all very sort of on all fours, like desperation and fear really comes across. And then the scene with Maurice Reeves and Roy Hodder's characters when they're atop of the sand dune, and he's got him at gunpoint, and he's trying to get him to bite down on is it a cyanide capsule or something like that? He's trying to bump him off. It's all really, really visceral. And the like of which hadn't been seen on Doctor Who up to that point, I would argue. And obviously, I mean, it can't have upset too many people, because he was back again the next year for Revelation of the Daleks, the Eric Saywood story. It's slightly different animal, but it's got that same filmic quality. I mean, the huge amounts of episode one of that are done on location, and Graham Harper's sensibilities, they just, I mean, I would imagine there's Probably similar stories there, because there's the fight in the snow with the mutants rolling down the
Yeah,
embankment.
well, apparently, there was meant to be a doll that was meant to get catapulted.
Was
Have you
it?
heard of this story?
Was
That
it? Tell me more.
in
Catapulted
the
Daleks.
in yeah, I don't know which bit it were, but you know, he liked his action
Yeah.
sequences, and yeah, there was they got it all sorted out how they were going to get this Dalek catapulted. But the day that they were going to film it, it had snowed that much.
This was on location as well.
This was on location.
Okay.
Yeah. And that they didn't do it, and it really did express disappointment that they couldn't catapult this Dalek. But yeah, do you think it would have worked?
I can't imagine where that would have been, because I don't
I
remember there being any Daleks on. Oh, there were at the very end of episode one, when the Doctor's working his way through tranquil repose through the Garden of Fond Memories. I think you just see a couple of Daleks pass right at the back of shot. The Doctor doesn't quite see them, and we don't quite see them. So maybe I think catapulting a Dalek across the shot might have given the game away. I can't quite imagine this, but I'm certainly going to go and read up about it later on. But this is it. I mean, that he's obviously he had these really quite guerrilla ideas. It sounds like inventive stuff, challenging stuff, and playing crazy eight bonkers stuff. But you know, you'd rather have somebody like that and get them to rein it in than have somebody who's got no ideas and no originality and no flair and no ambition behind the camera. And well, if he's 74 now, he would have been in his mid-40s then. Around the age that I am now, and yeah, so that's it's quite inspiring, really, isn't it? But did he? How long did the event last? Did he speak for very long?
It was in two halves. So the first half was the interview. Then we had a break, and he did some signing and photos and things. And then we went back, and he talked about kind of more modern Who, and then showed us these rushes. And we went over by about an hour, and then he stayed. His wife was there as well.
Ha
And you know, anybody who didn't get a chance to talk to him or get anything signed, he must have stayed at least another hour and a half after the event. He just got so much time
Yeah,
for everyone who was there.
I bet he and his wife was. I bet they had a chippy tea on the way home.
They did. I bet they did.
Yeah.
I
So you did. Well, can you remind us, Sarah, what we're looking at the New Who era now, and my memory's not the best. So remind us which stories he worked on the
He
new era
worked
of the
out.
Doctor.
He didn't. He was going to work on series one. When he heard that Doctor was coming back in, was it 2003? It was announced.
Yeah.
He actually contacted Russell T Davies because he'd been working with him on the Waterfront.
Oh, yeah, the kids show, yeah.
They were already in touch, and basically he was like, "I want to direct. I want to direct me." But there was a scheduling conflict, so he
Oh, wow,
couldn't, which is why
so it would have happened, really, if it wasn't for
it would have
that.
happened.
Because he'd stayed directing the entire time that Doctor Who was off. He had carried on directing. I mean, he'd done Juliet Bravo, he'd done Bergerac and Howard's Way and all these, some of the biggest Sunday night kind of dramas on British TV. But for a man who clearly loves science fiction, and we also directed some of Star Cops as well. I have to mention Star Cops, three fantastic episodes of Star Cops. He was the guy who decided it would be a brilliant idea to turn the lighting down in Star Cops. It's very overlit, most of it. A brilliant show. But yeah, I mean, you can imagine when he heard the Doctor Who was coming back, and British science fiction, when he loved it so much, it's good to know that he was banging on the door right away. So it was always just a matter of time, was it? Is that the impression that you
It
got?
was, yeah, it was just scheduling. But then in season two, he did Rise of the Cybermen, Age of Steel, Army of Ghosts, and Doomsday.
Those are the four real sort of powerful blockbuster episodes, aren't they? Probably, I mean, particularly in the case of Doomsday, that's I'd say that's probably one of the most iconic Doctor Who episodes of all time, just for the last 10 minutes alone.
Yeah,
but the scenes in that.
He showed some footage of filming that, you know, the scenes on the beach.
The Bad Wolf Bay stuff.
Yeah, and he said he'd gone to the trailer and David and Billy were practicing and he'd gone to ask him, because they had to do, I don't know what the technical term is, but they had to shoot, you know, one of them all the way through and then the other, and then do the same the other way through. And he was asking who wanted to go first. And Billy said, can I go first? Because I don't think I'll be able to match it. Yeah. Yeah. The second time, I don't think it'll be as good. So he said, yeah, you know, you can go first. And it showed Jim keeping the camera rolling on it, and God, that scene went on for so long and he wouldn't stop filming, and he actually got in trouble with I think it was the production manager, because he waited a few seconds. I think he waited like 30 seconds to shout cut because he wanted to get every bit of anguish on poor Billy's face, and it was really heartbreaking to watch whatever she was thinking about, you know. I mean, obviously you can tell in the finished thing, but seeing it, you know, in this raw footage, how distraught she was. Yeah, we're all reaching for the hankies and tissues.
I remember it. I haven't watched that episode for a long time, and I remember it as being obviously very, very emotional, but yeah, very, very long scene, and something that was, you know, because Doctor Who in... certainly the Stephen Moffat era, and even in the Russell T Davies era, had this reputation for some of the finales being a little rushed, some of the, you know, the tying it all together. And in that instance, and it was only a standard, I think it was only a standard episode, wasn't it? It wasn't a full hour. And they did seem to have that luxury to just let things, it felt so, so natural. And I suppose that's clearly the reason why. Challenge conventions to bring us that natural conversation and to reach its natural end rather than some sort of stamping down on the moment. But where do you how on earth do you follow delivering that? Though he came back the following year, didn't he, for series 3?
Series 3, yeah. He did 42.
That's a nice cheer for one.
What a way to come at. I think that was it for season 3. It was 42 in Utopia. But he did have an interesting story about Sir Derek Jacobi when he was filming the big reveal moment when he says, I am the master. And he said it was doing this tracking shot. He likes his tracking shots. And he was doing this slow tracking shot, you know, leading up from his shoulders right into his face, as he said. And he said when he did it, he said he was actually shocked because his eyes had gone black. Because I don't know how he did it, but it's just like, you know, whatever he was channeling.
Yeah.
He said he was absolutely terrified behind the camera.
It was an incredible moment. So potent.
Yeah,
and yeah, I mean that episode had been sport for me, so I knew exactly what was going to happen, and it still scared the hell out of me. I was in my 30s at the time.
How come it was sport for you?
Yeah. Oh, how was it used? That was it. Was the Sun? The Sun newspaper printed the entire synopsis for that episode, and you know how people are. Someone thought someone sort of sought me out. Somebody that I know in the real world. Not a Doctor Who fan, and thought, obviously, because I'm a Doctor Who fan, that I would therefore love to know every single plot twist of the next episode. Yeah, so, and they speak very, very quickly, so before I could really really stop them, yeah, that episode was very much sport for me. But this is a testament to great entertainment, because it was still, it still had me on the edge of my seat. It was still so audacious, and that moment in particular. I'd got very, very small children at the time, and we'd been watching classic Doctor Who, and they'd been asking me, Daddy, when's the Master coming? You know, is the Master going to be in it? You know, the questions that you'd want the kids to ask.
Yeah.
And even though I knew that he was coming back, They didn't. So I could watch them and the look on their faces as their favourite bad guy, because they absolutely adore the Master, came back to life before their very eyes. So, yeah, I owe Graham Harper again for that. It's a moment of my Doctor Who fandom that I'll never forget.
Yeah.
And okay, yeah, it's a fantastic script, that story. It's one of my favourite episodes, in fact. But Harper brings so much to it. So it's not a surprise that he was back again the next year, wasn't he?
Yeah, he did quite a lot. He did Planet of the Owned, and Turn Left, Unicorn and the Wasp, and then the finale, the Stolen Earth and Journey's End.
I hadn't realised he'd done that many. I certainly hadn't realised he did the finale of Season 4, or I'd just forgotten Series 4. That's a good chunk. I mean, The Unicorn and the Wasp is completely different. That's definitely not in his wheelhouse, is it?
I don't know. He has done period dramas. But yeah, it isn't what you'd normally expect, yeah. But yeah, I totally get Stolen Earth and Journey's End with all the explosions and things.
Were the rushes confined to Series 2? Or did he have other...
There was some for Season 3 and for Season 4. Series 4. There was this wonderful one where you remember the scene in the... what was the Dalek ship called? The Crucible.
Yeah.
Where there's Jackie, Sarah Jane and Mickey. And they've just escaped. They've just... transmattered away from... Yeah. And they're hiding and they're watching what's going off. And of course, that was all CG, so they had no idea. And then you get this Graham Harper running around, pretending, acting out what was happening. He's shouting, and the faces were fantastic. Camille Cajou is just this one out face of what? Rolling her eyes.
Was that where it ended for Graham Harper on Doctor Who? Was that his last episode for now?
It was, yeah.
Yeah. So how did you got to spend 5 or 10 minutes with Graham Harper, didn't you? How did you find him?
I did. Oh, it was lovely. Really, it's just a lovely, warm, friendly, humble, and because he just looks like a normal dude. I mean, he got this shirt and tie. He looked a bit like, you know, like a coach driver. We're lovely. And I got a chance to talk to him, and you know, I had a DVD for him to sign, and I was gushing about Doomsday. I mean, I think they're the two, aren't they? It's Caves of Androzani and Doomsday. That's all. Yeah. They're his main two. But yeah, I mean, obviously that. It was life changing, especially for me at the time, because you know I jumped on board with the new series. So you know, my first companion departure. I mean, it was traumatic, and it was all his fault. Well, him and Russell. he was very proud that he traumatized me as a young woman. But it was lovely.
So,
I had a really lovely time.
So, do you think that this event was obviously a big success? Because we've seen some of your pictures. You had your picture taken with Graham, didn't you? Mm-hmm. And we'll put this in the show notes and pop it again on Instagram so people can see again if they missed the first time. But have the venue plans to have any more Q&As with other Doctor Who personnel, past or present? Do you know?
I've not heard anything, but they have got a Facebook page. Which I can't remember at the moment. I will find it out and I will get it. I'll get it up in the Instagram and.
Because maybe if we all pester them, Sarah, if you get in touch with them, and you as well, listening to this, if we all get together and sort of put all these things in the suggestion boxes, then maybe they'll become a regular thing, and you can go to lots of those and come back and tell us about them. How does that sound?
Wow, I love that, yeah. Any excuse.
Yeah, our roving guy. Because you do like to go to a few events per year, don't you? You know,
I usually go to the small ones, the intimate ones. I've not done the big cons yet.
You know, I think this is. I think the smaller ones are probably the best experience. I mean, when I was going to conventions, they were considerably smaller than something like Gallifrey One is now. And you know, I won't say that you were rubbing shoulders with people, but it was really, really very, you know, very, very friendly, quite informal, and you could probably get a hug a lot easier. You like a hug, don't you?
I do like hugs. Yes.
Yeah. There you go. I mean, with Graham Harper, directly after Doctor Who. He wasn't quite done with the Doctor Who universe, was he? I understand he directed several episodes of the Sarah Jane Adventures.
He did, yeah.
My brain can't contain all the Doctor Who information, so the chances of me retaining that are next to impossible.
I have got written down what they were. What happened to Sarah Jane? And then the last two stories of the second series, which was The Temptation of Sarah Jane Smith, An Enemy of the Bane.
So those were the scary ones, weren't they? I remember whatever happened to Sarah Jane. That was that was particularly, that was the one where she was sort of wiped out of existence, wasn't it? Yeah, that was very Graham Harper looking back. And I understand that, I mean, even though he's in it well into his 70s now, he hasn't stopped since Doctor Who either.
No, he's still going. He did recently did the Inside Number 9 Christmas special.
Oh, that's him, is it? Oh, there we go. It's the League of Gentlemen connection again, isn't it? I can't say I'm surprised now you've told me that, but he's a perfect match for that kind of, the darkness, isn't he? The black comedy, that slight Ealing comedy feel that they've got to those shows. Because you know, I've been reading how he did amazing things on Coronation Street, didn't he, of all things. Wasn't he the guy who shot the famous train crash that wiped out half the cast?
Yeah.
And, you know, was alleged. Did they use a full-size train for that?
Who else could do that?
I think he did. In fact, I think he did catapult the train.
So he just liked his catapults.
Yeah. He had to wait 20, 30 years, but he got to catapult something really considerably bigger than a Dalek.
He's got a wicked sense of humour as well, which you probably thought he would have anyway. But yeah, he was
a
lovely gentleman.
I mean,
he directed Time Crash. That's what I wanted to tell you.
Of course. I'm glad you mentioned Time Crash. Did he talk much about that? Because obviously that was Peter Davison's proper return to the part, wasn't it? Since Caves.
Yes.
I mean, you could say Dimensions in Time, but we don't talk about Dimensions in Time. So between 84 and 2007, wasn't it, Time Crash? So yeah, that's a 23-year gap, and so to have Harper there must have been great for Peter Davison. Did he say much about that at the event?
He didn't actually. No, he just said that, but it was just a really small crew. It was really into, because obviously it was
secret.
Well, was it that secret? I can't remember.
Well, they film those Comic Relief and Children in Need minisodes quite a way in advance, I believe.
Yeah.
And so I suppose the longer in advance they film them, and the more bodies that are floating around, the greater the chance that the surprise, because that's all they really want to do, isn't it? Preserve surprise, that the surprise would get out. And of course, he wouldn't have been paid for that either. So it's probably wouldn't I talk about something not get paid for? Why would you bother? It's obviously a fantastic cause, and the fact that Graham Harper had just come off the back of what were then, let's be honest, you know, this is no slight on Caves of Androzani or anything that had come before, Army of Ghosts and Doomsday were the biggest Doctor Who episodes of all time. I would say, I think that's a fair statement to make. And the fact that Harper was the biggest director on Doctor Who at the time, that he would take the time to do that, you know, as well as David Tennant and Peter Davison, it says a lot, speaks volumes, that does. I mean, when I look back in the dark days of the 1990s, when Doctor Who had disappeared and we only had the vaguest glimmer that it would ever be back, he was involved in a project called The Dark Dimension. And does that ring a bell to you, Sarah?
No, I don't think so.
It's just for us old fogies. The Dark Dimension was a project back in 1993. It was Doctor Who's 30th anniversary, of course. There was an appetite within fandom, because fandom had never died off, and there was an appetite to get something. Now, we'd had the three Doctors in 73. We'd had the five Doctors in 83. 93 rolls up. Doctor Who wasn't on. We weren't going to get an anniversary special. And then out, as if by magic, really quite quickly, a project appeared called The Dark Dimension, a story written by a guy called Adrian Rigglesford, I was never sure how to pronounce that. And the director announced on this feature-length project was Graham Harper. And of course, fandom went ballistic about this. They really did. You know, and Adrian Rigglesford's he wasn't a popular guy then. You know, I've never met him. I'm sure he's lovely. But, he was a fan and a fan writer. But the credibility that Graham Harper's involvement got people very, very excited. Mm. And it was going to involve all the living Doctors at the time and a villain who was, I believe they'd asked David Bowie. If you don't ask, you don't get, do you? He, of course, turned it down. But in the end, I mean, I believe they were circling that Rick Mayall was likely going to play the villain in this thing, and Tom Baker was going to be the main Doctor with the other Doctors playing a part in it. And Sophie Aldred was going to be in it, and there was new designs for the Cybermen and the Daleks. It was going to be, but the thing about it was, it was going to be put out exclusively on BBC home video tape on VHS. Right. Because at the time, the VHS range was Doctor Who. That's where it was thriving. That's where the money was. You know, people were buying two tapes every 2 months. And so we all got very, very excited. And Graham Harper got excited because there was an interview with him in DWM. And just as quickly as the project appeared, it disappeared. It was cancelled, and we never knew why. We never knew why for years and years and years. And I'll say this for him, he always owns up. Eventually it came to light that it was cancelled pretty much on the insistence of Philip Siegel, who was working at Amblin at the time. And Amblin were courting the BBC to with a view to making a whole series of Doctor Who, which of course did become the Paul McGann TV movie. So it did, you know, it was cancelled with the best of intentions. But somewhere out there's a Dark Dimension and a parallel universe where Graham Harper did make that feature length straight to VHS movie of the Dark Dimension. How Big Finish haven't adapted this thing yet, I have no idea. But I'm sure if you're listening to this, Nick Briggs, get on it. So there was that, and there's other things that Graham Harper's been involved with. Some of my personal favourites are two comedy shows, The Detectives and The New Statesman. If you've ever seen those?
He talked about them.
Of course, The New Statesman starred Rick Mayall, so maybe that was where. Because it would have been around the same time. It's all starting to fit together now. The Rick Mayall code, all the pieces fit together. So it's quite a career and quite a man. And I'm very jealous that you got to meet him. Bit of a hero. He's a bit of a hero of mine too. I mean, these stories, you know, there's a lot of Doctor Who fans hold these stories, you know, particularly the classic ones, in very, very high regard. And, thank you for sharing your stories of the event with us, Sarah. Because for those of us who couldn't be there, and believe me, if you drop it out that you're going anywhere else again, you better make sure you come back and tell us about it. Because
I will do, definitely.
You know, we're on the Fandom Podcast Network, and this is a huge, huge part of fandom. And talking of the Fandom Podcast Network, aside from discussing Doctor Who here on Type 40, there's a wide variety of other shows that I can guarantee you're going to enjoy listening to all across the Fandom Podcast Network. So please come back here after this quick word about all of that for some final thoughts from Sarah and I on this edition of Type 40.
Thank you for listening. We hope you're enjoying this podcast. We'd like to recommend these other great podcasts on the Fandom Podcast Network. It starts with our flagship show, Culture Clash. our weekly pop culture podcast with the latest news, reviews, and other fun topics in pop culture. For you Highlander fans, we've got Blood of Kings, a Highlander podcast where we cover all things Highlander. Couch Potato Theater is for you movie buffs, our podcast celebrating the cult classics and fan favorite movies we don't get off the couch for. Time Warp, a look back on our classic and nostalgic fandoms that we still celebrate today. We also have End Zone for you NFL fans, our podcast talking about all things current in the NFL and giving our best mediocre fantasy football advice. Good Evening, an Alfred Hitchcock podcast with host Tom, Brandon, and Chris discussing the master of suspense, Alfred Hitchcock. And for you Star Trek Discovery and Orville fans, we have Discoville, talking about everything Discovery and the Orville. And for you hard rock music fans, we have the Hair Metal Podcast. The Hair Metal Podcast rediscovers the nostalgia of the 1980s hair metal bands. And we also have Type 40, a Doctor Who podcast, where we discuss all things Doctor Who, both past and present. And our newest podcast, Lethal Mullet, our podcast celebrating action movies from the 1980s with your host, Adam P. O'Brien. You can find these great shows on the Fandom Podcast Network master feed at fpnet.podbean.com. The Fandom Podcast Network is on iTunes, Stitcher, Podbean, Google Play, and now on Spotify. On Facebook, you can find us at Fandom Podcast Network, on Instagram, Fandom Podcast Network, and also on Twitter at FanPod Network. You can also email us directly at FandomPodcastNetwork@gmail.com. Thank you so much for listening and supporting the Fandom Podcast Network. And remember, respect others and enjoy your fandom.
Hello again, we're back. All those shows, all those wonderful things to talk about. So much going on in all the realms of geek entertainment, and Culture Clash is a particular favourite of mine. Have you heard that one, Sarah?
I am a bit behind with them, but I have got them all saved.
the Fandom Podcast Network puts out so much stuff, almost too much to listen to. You need a TARDIS sized phone just to stream it all from. But yeah, it's marvelous stuff. I mean, going back to Graham Harper, just before we pack it in for this episode, do you think he could ever come back, Sarah? What are the chances?
I think he would. He's such a fan of the show, and he's so loyal to it and enthusiastic about it. And he did, one of the members of the audience did bring up Series 11 and asked his thoughts about it. And he was diplomatic about it and could see it from both sides. But I think it'd be pretty exciting to get, you know, his take on episode. You know, get Bradley Walsh doing some stunts and, you know.
Because it is, you know, all joking apart, it is important that a show like Doctor Who, as frustrated as we may get with it sometimes, that it brings through new writers and new directors just as much as it did in the 80s. You know, it should still be doing that now. And I suppose Graham Harper knows that only too well, that he benefited from that, from John Nathan Turner. So it's only right that other people come in. But I found a lot of the directing, particularly last year, quite forgettable. And there are certain people that do stand out. But I think to get the best mix, of course you should bring those new people through, but it's great to have have one or two steady hands who they can rely on to deliver the goods. And those, particularly those tentpole episodes, the finales, the two-parters.
Yeah.
And I don't think anybody has done that with the same sense of scale and epic storytelling. And a way of working with the actors in the way that Graham Harper has. I mean, this is a guy who's 74 years of age. And it's a punishing schedule on Doctor Who, isn't it? But maybe if we get writing again, maybe for the 60th anniversary.
Oh, brilliant, yeah. Well, I mean, he does remain the only director to have worked on Classic Who and New Who. So we do need him to work on New Who.
You're right.
Yeah.
I hadn't. Because Mike Tucker, Mike Tucker was on the effects team in the Sylvester McCoy era. Mm. Certainly, he still works on the show now, I believe, on miniatures and things. But yeah, directors, you're absolutely right. And yeah, it's he's one of one there. Yeah, go down in history for that.
What?
Double, yeah, even more so. Well, I think that about covers it. And yeah, it sounds like a terrific event. And yeah, it's been great to have you here, Sarah. Yeah, the time lock is off.
Thank you. I've earned it.
The time scoop's going to drop you off any second now. And yeah, we're going to be back for more time Type 40 soon on the next episode. We're going to be talking even more Blu-rays. Do you fancy that, Sarah? Do you fancy coming along for the ride?
I do, yeah. Yes, count me in.
There you go. Get the disc spinning. But and there'll be other voices on that too, of which, well, you can find that out at the time. But for now, on behalf of all of us at the Fandom Podcast Network, thank you for listening. And join us again next time on another episode of Type 40, a Doctor Who Fandom Podcast, where we always have the time if you have the space.